Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington, and I'm sitting with Mr. Money Mustache. How are you doing today?
What's up, Doug? I'm splendid, as always, on a Tuesday.
We're back in the studio, and it's been a little while since we recorded last, but we've seen each other several times. But today, we're covering a pretty fun topic, and this is the FIRE movement is dead, in our reaction to some of the commentary that's out there, which turns out there's a huge amount of commentary.
Yeah, the idea for this, for us talking about this, is one day I was on YouTube, and I didn't even know people were making content like this. Like, as far as I'm concerned, the FIRE movement is just keeps growing, and it's always like surprising how widespread it is. People, like, you go to your dentist, and they're like, oh, the FIRE movement, I'm doing that too. But then all these people are saying it's dead, and I'm like, what the, like, where does this even come from? So I started scrolling through, and there's like one after and after another, finding it very interesting. So I decided to click on them and watch them and summarize like what these people are really saying. And the results were kind of surprising, like maybe in multiple ways. I don't know if I should give it away too much. So instead, what I thought we might do in this show is just like, we took roughly six of them, some from people we know. So that's kind of interesting. And analyze them, and then we can come up with if we really think the FIRE movement is dead or if there's some other problem out there. I suspected, as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, this is probably a good sign because the FIRE movement is so big now that people feel like they have to attack it instead of just not noticing it if it was just smaller. So I'm like, oh, why would they be attacking it? Maybe it's even bigger than I thought.
Interesting. And when did you start your blog? Because this will all kind of come into play, because I view this as kind of an evolution, and you kind of hit one of the points. But when did you start your blog?
For me, it was 2011, although I certainly wasn't the first person writing about it.
Right. And then I started unrelated blog to FIRE, but I started a blog in 2013. And some of the people that I was following, they were kind of in the creator space and talking to creators. And I think they mentioned, like, if you have haters out there, that means you really made it, because like you said, there's commentary against you. Like, it's so big that someone is getting attention by being negative about you.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting. So I always had that mentality. And some years later, I had like hater videos against me and my ideas. Awesome. Or really wasn't against me. A lot of times, again, we don't want to give anything away. A lot of times people, they'll give the compliment sandwich. So they're like, there's some good ideas out there, but here's my issue and here's some other good ideas. And I'm like, you fucker, you agree with me. Like, what are you even talking about?
Yeah.
But it does mean that someone else is thinking about you so much that they want to be mean on the internet towards you and your ideas.
And this is actually a big pitfall that many new writers or creators fall into, is they don't realize that this ridiculous phenomenon exists. Like, for me, I would never criticize some famous person. You know, I'd talk to my friends about it, but I'm not going to make, like, you know, some stuff like, why Hugh Jackman is an asshole or whatever, like someone who's actually super nice. So anyway, that phenomenon slips a lot of people up because they're like, oh my God, people hate me. I'm going to delete my whole blog. This is terrible. Like, I didn't realize I was such a bad person. But your attitude is much healthier, which is you have to see it as a good sign. And the internet's a big place, and there's always going to be people who complain about everything. So if you can be a good guy that also gets complaints, then that's about as good as you can do in the grumpy world of the internet.
The other weird thing, and then I think we could probably kind of launch into it, but the other thing is I'm aware that sometimes there's a persona, right? Like a stand-up comedian walk different on stage than they are in real life, in person, if you just hang out with them. So there's a chance some of these folks were a little negative. There's a chance they're totally normal, nice people, but they have like a very angry writing persona. I'm thinking of a very specific one here. Yeah. And I'm like, hopefully they're not that angry, especially at you. Like, it sounded way more personal than I thought.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's a persona behind it, and they're doing it for views and attention. And I'm going to do my best. Call me on it if I slip, but I'm going to do my best not to criticize people directly or do the compliment sandwich thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because my idea is that they're not bad actors. They're probably doing their best, and in their world, like, whatever they're saying is rational.
Yeah.
Even though it seems like batshit crazy sometimes.
Yeah. Yep. Good point. And without the comparison, it sounds like the first person that we're going to address doesn't really know anything about the fire movement. So he's reacting to stuff that he's imagining that it's like, which angers him because it's the exact opposite of his lifestyle, which is interesting because he doesn't even understand what he's criticizing. But even if he did understand it, I didn't like his tone, you know, because I'm kind of like the Ned Flanders of criticism. I'm like, well, maybe we could all have better ideas together.
Yeah. It's like he watched a South Park episode about the fire movement. Mm-hmm. That would be hilarious if they did an episode on it.
I want to see South Park Mr. Money Mustache in a flannel shirt riding a mountain bike through the snow. Man. That's how I would know I can die happy.
If there's any writers on the team, like, send the idea in. Like, we're in Colorado. They could totally make fun of us. I have a fucking Casa Bonita mug right here next to me.
I have the Casa Bonita kids passport here.
Which is a great map, by the way. We went the other day, but I'll save that for another time. Okay. I think, Pete, we could probably get into the meat and potatoes and kind of hit the first topic here, which is from Jared Dillon.
Yeah. The title of the piece is The Fire Movement. So that's pretty simple. Now, I'm going to have to do a quick camera cut because this requires a bit of outfit change, wardrobe.
All right. So we have Jared Dillon.
What's up, Doug? Thanks a lot for having me on the show.
All right. Welcome.
So I wrote this piece because I became aware of this thing called the Fire Movement. And let me just go right into quoting a little bit from my own excellent writing. Joe Millennial spends a bit too much time on Reddit and decides to try something called the Fire Movement. So here's how it goes. Joe graduates from college and gets a job in the Cube Farm for $80,000 a year. He gets the cheapest apartment possible, rides a bike instead of driving, and eats ramen noodles. He does this for 10 years, saving up to 70% of his income and investing in low-cost index funds. At the end of 10 years, more if he's lucky, at that point, he retires to play the guitar or paint happy little trees and gradually draws down his savings over time. If the stock market keeps going up as planned, he can stay retired for 50 or more years and get really good at guitar. This is the fucking stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Jared, strong words. It sounds like you described my life a little bit there. I have several guitars laying around and I'm really working on it.
Now, I have three issues with this. Unstructured time is how you do the work of the devil. What are you going to do? Just fucking sit there in the living room with the brown carpet, Fox News turned up to 11? Retiring is hard. If you don't have a plan, you'll descend into loneliness and despair with Fox News as background noise. Number two, the worst part is you'll spend every waking moment hawking over the movements of the stock market. If the stock market goes down and stays down, you'll have to get a job, which will be impossible if you have a 10-year gap in your CV. Number three, this is a fact. Material things bring us happiness. It's good and right and a joyful thing to see a fancy new jacket in a store, try it on, look in the mirror, whip out your credit card, wear it out of the store, and show it off to all your friends. to deny yourself a lifetime of material possessions is insanity. Number four, the fire people typically use very generous return assumptions, 12% a year, even 15%. The stock market doesn't do that. The one thing all fire people have in common, number five, is that they hate work. And then, this is my favorite part. You know who is responsible for this ridiculousness? White people. More specifically, white guys in checkered shirts with ironic mustaches in Longmont, Colorado. One of the questions you have to ask about finance is, what if everyone did it? And then I go on and on, but my audience tends to be finance people, and most finance people think the fire movement is pretty dumb, so I'm preaching to the converted. All right, that's all I had to say on that.
All right. Thanks, Jared.
So that was nice of Jared to share his perspective firsthand, but really, it's totally bullshit.
Well, it was surprising to have Jared come to my house. Nice guy off camera overall. Good dude.
I didn't think he was very nice.
So how did you find this one?
So this was the worst one. And that's why I put it first, is to set the tone for like how bad things can be in criticism of the fire movement. Like, he could have said that stuff in a nicer way, whatever. Maybe he's got a style. That's fine. But the main problem is that the stuff is wrong. You know, like the first thing is people are not retiring in order to do nothing. Like, it's okay if you have guitars. You'll probably get really good at guitar, which is you've demonstrated by having more free time, but there's like a lot of other stuff to do too. And like Jared's assumption is that work is the only meaning in your life. So if you give that up, then you're not going to be doing anything and you're going to be bored, which is obviously like that's a, you'd never have any reason to stop working, even like a shitty job, if that were kind of the only thing that were to life. It's just like, well, I have a shitty job or something that's even worse. Those are my two choices in life. So it's a very profound lack of imagination.
Right. And when I look at the thing overall with his piece, I have to assume that he wanted it to be an us versus them situation. So he's like, we're over here and we're doing this. And these guys over there, they have it wrong, but we're doing something virtuous and it makes sense to us, and fuck them over there. And you can still say that in a nicer way. He did come down hard. The other funny part, I actually read it to Elizabeth right before she stepped away. He makes fun of the banjo too. And I'm like, motherfucker, those are like our two hobbies. We're playing music together. And it turns out, because I looked a little bit at his background, and I'll send this over to Jared so he could check it out. Like, we'll have a laugh, but he says he's a writer, an investor, an electronic music curator. And the other note is dad to 7 wonderful cats. So I won't comment on that, but
it can't be that bad, because like I kind of like cats. Although 7, I don't quite understand how that works. But
yeah, that's getting to be a little many. I wouldn't have that many dogs. I love dogs. But anyway, the point is, he's a writer. It seems like he's a bit of an artist. So I'm surprised that he was shitting on music so much.
Yeah,
instruments and expression and creativity. So that's one issue. Aside from, again, that's the overview portion. Aside from the factual issues. So one, I think people in the audience know, we usually don't use 12 or 15%. I don't recall hearing anyone ever mentioning those
except kind Dave of returns. Ramsey, but that's not the Fire Movement.
Oh yeah, we'll get to that guy in a second. Jesus.
Dave Ramsey will make an appearance on this very list in a few minutes.
Yeah, so I think the one thing that this one missed is usually there's some piece where they say, well, at least the Fire Movement, they're buying back their time. And we'll hit those notes. But like, he didn't mention like, hey, at least these people could do whatever the fuck they want and they don't have to answer to anyone. That's a big thing for me personally. Apparently, I have a problem working for people. I don't know if you did, but like, I'm happier working for myself. Yeah. I think a lot of people are like that. This guy sounds like he's an independent creator. He doesn't sound like he's working for anyone.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, maybe he also has a finance job or something. But anyway, that is often a mistake that people make about the Fire Movement, and they think that it means you're not doing anything productive. And not that you have to do anything productive, but a lot of people choose to do that. You just do whatever you want. You just don't need to chase after money. That's the real thing, because you have enough money. It might even be many times more money than you need, which I think that's aspirational, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people who succeed in getting financially independent, they have a lot of energy, a lot of ideas. Of course, they're going to keep doing stuff that looks like work. But anyway, yeah, one of the quotes I really wanted to have from Jared is, after a few years of self-abuse, you'll write a book that nobody reads, play a song that nobody hears, or start a blog that nobody clicks on. I thought that was kind of ironic, because then I looked at his blog, and it's like, by Jared Dillon, over 10,000 subscribers. I'm like, huh. I know some people who have substantially more than 10,000 subscribers, and we won't embarrass with actual numbers, but it's just funny that he would be calling out nobody reading your stuff, and then he has 10,000 subscribers.
Yeah. And then, well, the other part, again, going back to the creativity portion, it's like you're doing these creative pursuits like writing or playing music for yourself and your own enjoyment.
Yeah.
Like, that's the purest form versus like, hey, I'm going to pander to a group of people.
Yeah.
So I think, I mean, if you want to do that, like, I'm open to anyone. If Jared wants to do it this way, that's totally cool. People have different opinions. That's great. But yeah, like, to do the art form for the purest form of the art form.
That's
like,
the real artists. Yeah.
And yeah. So what the fuck is this guy talking about?
I know. A lot of times you find a following if you happen to be good at something and you put enough time into it. But that's not really having a lot of money saved is not going to make you a worse artist. In fact, I would say it gives you time to become a better artist, which means if having a big fan base is your thing, then you have a bigger chance at that. And like, even with my writing, I certainly didn't try to create it as a job, but I wouldn't have started it if I hadn't quit my engineering job. Mm-hmm. And it did catch on in the internet and it got enough fans, but I wasn't defined by my numbers either. It was mm-hmm. just, I just enjoyed sharing these ideas and I still enjoy that.
What about his point number two about every waking moment looking over the stock market? How often do you check your portfolio?
That is so backwards and it's just a total misunderstanding. Like if you do FIRE right, you don't care about the stock market at all, because if you understand the statistics behind it, you get to a point where you have the 4% rule covered. No matter what the stock market does, you're set for life. That's the definition of the 4% rule, right? Like there might be teeny, teeny, tiny nitpicks like, oh, maybe it's 3.8% in times of high valuation or whatever, but you're certainly not worrying. You know, like I retired in 2005 before the great financial crisis. And then a bunch of stuff has gone down since then, including the COVID crash and a bunch of things in between. I don't even remember what happened to my portfolio of stocks at that time, because I just knew there would be plenty. And I happened to have some spare cash at the time. So I was excited to buy more shares on sale during each of those events. But yeah, you don't worry about the stock market if you've retired correctly.
Number five. So he's this point here, he says, one thing that FIRE people have in common is they hate work. And I will say a lot of people do hate work, FIRE movement or not. A lot of people like work, FIRE movement or not.
Yeah.
There's some folks in our group of friends who they could retire. They did retire for a bit, but they went back to work after a sabbatical. We have another friend who does some part-time work in his old profession. So still that same stuff that he liked before. And he's working on projects that he enjoys to help out another friend who's starting a business. So it's like, you can go back to work. What do you think about people hating their jobs, and then unhappy people will always be unhappy and happy people will always be happy? You kind of brought up that point. I don't know if we didn't read that. We'll link up so you could read this article if you want.
Yeah. Well, I think it's quite natural to hate certain jobs, and especially working for other people, it might be more likely because you can't control the conditions of that job nearly as well. And then most FIRE people, at least the ones that I know, they take up work for themselves in one way or the other. Like for me, it's just carpentry and building houses. And I usually don't do it for pay, but sometimes I do it for like a nominal rate when it's appropriate. So you could say that's work, because sometimes I work pretty hard, long manual labor days, but it's not for the money. That's my definition of retirement, is you work and you don't need the money. Whether or not you get paid for it or not is irrelevant. Mm-hmm.
I want to read a portion here from this point. So they talk about the soul-destroying 40-hour work week. I don't know about you, but I like the 80-hour work week even better. Although it must take time away from all his cats.
Yeah.
I have something in common with Mike Bloomberg. My favorite time of week is Sunday night, because I'm so excited about going back to work the following morning and do shit. The Sunday scaries are for cherries. I do like the rhyme there. That's cool.
Oh, yeah.
I'll go further and say these people are lazy pieces of shit. Can you imagine employing one of these people, plotting and scheming to do as little work as possible, counting the days until retirement, creating negative value in the process? Imagine a person whose goal is to produce nothing, consume nothing, merely exist, stealing everyone else's oxygen in the process.
Yeah. Well, if that were really the case, that would be pretty bad. But it's kind of the opposite. I view FIRE people as exceptionally productive. They create way more value than they consume, which is why they end up with a financial surplus. And they typically, a lot of them are in the highest professions, like doctors, attorneys, engineers, because they're just naturally curious and analytical people. And they're like, hey, I've got more money than I need. What else can you do with it just besides buying a fancy jacket? So, and then there's one more thing that I really, really wanted to point out is like, for a whole lot of people, they want to have kids. They choose to become parents at some point in their life. And there is no better way to go about parenthood than by being financially independent as early as possible in that thing, like preferably before your kids are even born. The most badass thing I ever did was not having to answer to an employer, so I could just hang out with my son and educate him and go on trips at any time. And we took like every summer off for the first 13 years of his life to be with family back in Canada. So, I mean, and parenting is a big, big job. Like, it's harder than a corporate job. And let's not forget, like, not everybody has children, but a lot of people do. It's the reason the human race exists, is someone had you in the past.
Right.
So we can't just pretend that child raising doesn't exist. And that's a huge, huge job. That alone justifies fire for anybody who wants to have kids.
Excellent point. And I'll just leave a little comment. So a lot of harsh stuff. And the thing is, like, everyone's in a different stage. If he digs working 80 hours a week, that's cool. But I think there's a big opportunity cost on other things that he could do. And I used to slightly be in the hustle culture area, adjacent with the make money online. So people talk about that sort of thing. But I never bought in. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, working so many hours, like, this is crazy. I mean, if you're working for your own thing, it's a little easier to justify it, knowing that there's not a lot of waste in the system. Where in my corporate job, I wasn't a lazy piece of shit, as he mentioned. I was very efficient. It turned out it makes your team better, especially in certain environments. If you're like, I want to be as lazy as possible, and you get rid of waste in the system. That said, I was also in the middle management area of a big corporation. So yeah, I did as little as possible because they were paying me as little as possible. It's just part of the arrangement. HR gives you a fucking lowball offer. They give you shitty raises. I'm doing it on the other side. I was a bad employee. I'm better working for myself, right?
Yeah.
Again, my team was very good, but I delegated as much as I could. And I've talked a little bit about it in the past. So not great working with me sometimes, but there were pros. There were definitely pros. Yeah.
Well, I can tell working in our hobby stuff that we do together, both music and podcasting, that you are a super hard worker and very meticulous. Oh, and that carries off in just having a better personal life, right? Because you, when you work hard, you can make more cool stuff happen in your life. So Jared's comment about 80 hours a week, like, if you enjoy your work that much, then absolutely. Like, I don't think I've ever worked 80 hours in a week because I need to do workouts and eating and sleep and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But sure, like 50 or 60. And those are the times when I'm most motivated, 50 or 60 for myself. That's great. I just wouldn't want to have to do it in order to pay for my never-ending stream of fancy jackets and little leather loafers and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think Jared was a little harsh. I disagree with most of it, but I have to assume, Jared, I think you'll probably end up watching this. You're probably a nicer guy than you're writing. And I bet you had a purpose for the reason you were doing this. At the end of the article, you pitch a book. So I assume you're trying to sell your book. And it's, again, an us versus them mentality. And there's a reason why it came off so abrasive.
Yeah. And to be fair, we're being abrasive here just to be funny. I understand that people criticize people on the internet all the time. But now we're going to do a little more rapid fire to get through the rest of these because we spent $26 minutes on Jared, which actually, to his credit, you know, he got us talking about him, which is no publicity is bad publicity, right?
That's right.
So okay. The next one is called "The Fire Movement Won't Work Like It's Used To. Here's Why." And we'll probably provide a picture or a link for this one. The summary of this one is that prices have gone up. Inflation, we all know that inflation happened a little faster than normal during the early 2020s. And AI is taking jobs, according to the creator here. But really, he's still positive on the FIRE movement. So my response to that is that the 4% rule already takes inflation into account. Like, your inflations go up with inflation as well. Sorry, your investments go up with inflation, and so do your groceries. Hopefully, your investments go up faster. It all comes out in the wash. The amount of investments I have has roughly doubled since 2020, whereas the price of groceries has gone up like 25%. So to me, they feel cheaper. Unless you get anchored on the prices and like, I only want bananas if they're 59 cents. Now they're 79. Damn it. Like, that's not the way to think about it. Inflation does not make you poorer. So that's the thing that I'm constantly fighting in the financial media these days, is people are talking like, you can't do FIRE because there's been inflation. I'm like, inflation has no effect on your wealth unless you are holding like cash, because then your cash is worth less. But if you have a job or if you have investments, inflation doesn't affect you. If you have a mortgage, inflation makes you richer because the value of your house goes up and your salary goes up. Your mortgage balance stays the same because the bank doesn't inflate your outstanding balance. So it actually deflates away your debts. So nobody should be complaining about inflation, especially now that it's back down to like less than 3%. He does make one good point, is that housing has gone up a lot faster than inflation in some cities, including our own Denver metro area. To his credit, he suggests moving if you can't afford to live in a super expensive area, even if it became super expensive while you live there, just start shopping around and either like tough up and pay the big prices, or at least consider other places you can live. I've moved like 20 different times in my life, and I don't even live in the same country I was born in, partly because I was in search of a high ratio of income to housing prices. And I found what I needed, and other people can find what they need, especially if they're younger. However, the real thing is that I think this guy did a great job. He's very pro-fire, and he only loses a few points for the clickbait headline. And he has a gravestone saying, "Rip fire, 2010 to 2024. Interesting, his name is Jared too, just spelled Jared.
Yep.
So thank you for contributing that. I think that's a good video. And we're ready to move on to the next one.
Yeah, let's do it.
So this one's pretty funny. It is Dave Ramsey himself. And the headline on YouTube is, "Why the fire movement isn't sustainable 1 year ago." And then it has a little caption over top of Dave's face that says, "It's burned out."
Oh, yeah.
You have a comment on this one? Did you watch it?
Yeah, I checked it out. And the premise is, so I'm not a Ramsey follower, but there's a caller and has something like $1.6 or $2 million net worth or so, working three jobs so that he can save $100,000 per year. I think he's in the Seattle area as well. So that's the setup of the call.
Yeah.
And then what happens?
Yeah, it's even crazier than that. So this guy calls and he's like, I'm stressed out. I'm working so hard. I have two jobs and it's affecting my health and my relationship. And I really just want to have time with my kids. And then Dave Ramsey is like, "Why are you working two jobs?" Like, he's like really cutting this guy up with very kind of harsh tones, and his co-host is doing the same thing. So that alone is fun. Like, especially watch the video version. It's pretty funny. And then the details come out that this guy, he's making, I think, $200,000 a year, and he's maxing out all the different accounts, like 401k and IRA and all that stuff, probably for his kids. And on top of that, he's saving an additional $100,000 into his brokerage account.
That's right.
And he has multiple rental houses worth a couple million dollars. And then even after the mortgage is on them, it's still like over $1 million of equity. So he has a $1.6 million net worth. In other words, he could quit immediately and still live a really good job, a really good lifestyle, and just hang out with his kids. Or he could work a tiny bit. But instead, he's working a ton to save money that he doesn't need. Now, to Dave Ramsey's credit, he calls us out and says, like, "You're done. You're going to be a multimillionaire no matter whatever you do." And he's like, "Why are you working?" And then the other guy's like, "Why are you afraid to spend time with your family? Do you not like your family?" And they're trying to get all controversial. It's quite funny. But the thing I didn't like is that Dave's like, "The fire movement burned down. It burned around people's ears because it's not sustainable." And he's like characterizing this guy as being what the fire movement is about.
Right.
I'm like, that's not what the fire movement, it's the opposite. The fire movement is you get enough money and then you quit so you can relax. This guy is like, you get too much money and then you get another job so you can work even harder. That's not the fire movement. So total clickbait headline, somewhat solid analysis by Ramsey in the sense that he's saying this guy does have enough money. And if us fire people had anything to do with this poor man overworking, then I'm sorry, because I certainly do not recommend that.
Yeah, definitely got his wires crossed somewhere. And my people check out this clip. And again, I don't watch Ramsey stuff. I know a lot of folks, many of our friends, they came into the fire movement via Ramsey. He's a good gateway drug, apparently. Mm-hmm. But what I was surprised is how mean he was.
Yeah.
He sounded like he didn't give a fuck about his audience. He was very contentious. And I'm not sure if they try to get callers on, if that is part of their YouTube strategy where he just tries to be an asshole, or if he is just an asshole. But I was like, fuck, man, this guy does not like his audience and doesn't respect them. It didn't seem helpful for the caller. Do you think the caller left with any sense of like what to do next? It was just like, hey, you fucked up. And then good luck. Yeah. Do they send him to counseling afterwards for therapy after talking to this dude?
I know. Great question. I've never watched any Ramsey Show stuff, so I don't know what happens and how the production works. But I certainly think that his tone could be nicer. Again, as a Canadian, I would always say this, but I think it'd be better if he's like, "Oh man, I'm so proud of you for working so hard. And guess what? I have really good news for you. You are already done. Like, this is amazing. I have great news for you. Like, why don't you go ahead and quit one of those jobs? Blah, blah, blah. Just like I've been doing in my coaching side hobby.
Right.
Is sometimes people are in a milder version of this very same situation, is that they have too much money and they're still working and they're not letting themselves relax. And I'm like, guess what? You don't even have to work until that next huge bonus or whatever you're holding out for, because it's not going to make any difference in your life. If you've exceeded the 4% rule, especially if you're like all the way, you've saved so much that you're on the 3% plan, you just have too much money and it's time to just stop thinking about money.
Very good. Yep. So I'm curious if anyone out there does follow Ramsey. Like, let me know. You can shoot me an email or leave a comment on YouTube, just if that's his normal MO for callers, because it was a little rough.
Yeah. And of course, as one of the defenders of the FIRE movement, I just didn't like how he said why the FIRE movement isn't sustainable and it's burned out. Like, that's wrong. That's not the FIRE movement. Now, if it was the opposite, if we were telling people you can retire on a 10% rule and saying, don't worry, like 100 grand is plenty to retire on, just do it, then that would be unsustainable. Mm-hmm. And we would deserve to be called out by people who know about finance. However, we actually kind of know the most about finance, like, because we're all boglehead nerds and we look at the statistics and everything.
Quick, before we hit the next one, I will say, I know Ramsey did have a clip where he was talking about, like, he was like, 4% rule, 8%. Just spend 8%. It doesn't fucking matter. Like, are you guys talking about, he didn't say fuck, but the FIRE movement, he's like, those guys are crazy, blah, blah, blah. And there was, I think Rob Berger did a video on it recently where he broke it down. Many people broke it down because the 8% rule is not a thing that will get you in trouble if the market drops 50%.
Yeah.
Kinda, that does fuck up your math.
There are only a few times in history when an 8% withdrawal rate would have worked out for you in your favor.
Mm-hmm. Some, but not many.
It would be a bad bet, especially now with the valuations higher on the stock market. The price to earnings ratio correlates with how much future returns you can expect. So you got to be a little more careful when the market's frothy.
Next one, kind of a friend of the FIRE movement, although this was a little clickbaity, is Ramit Sethi.
Yeah. So once again, the lie about FIRE is the big headline. And then is Ramit's handsome face with lots of fire behind him. And then we got the problem with the FIRE movement. So I was like, oh no. Because Ramit often writes, you know, semi-negative stuff about FIRE. And he characterizes FIRE people as being like super extremists and people not letting themselves have fun, which may or may not be true. They're just not people in my life. You know, everybody that we know has a lot of fun and enjoys our financial independence. Mm-hmm. And even though our good friends Carl and Mindy went on to Ramit's show and confessed that, you know, they're not perfectly free spenders, they still retained a few frugal habits, I thought that was like a good sign, right? Everybody should be self-evaluating. We all have our blind spots. We're all getting a little wiser each year.
Yeah.
And right after that interview, sure enough, Carl and Mindy came home and they started like splashing out $100 bills even more. Like, they were already fun-loving, generous people.
Yeah.
And then they took some ideas from Ramit and they're like, you know what? Yeah, we totally can afford whatever we want. So let's just do even more cool stuff. Good job. Good on them. When you look at Ramit's rant in there though, it turns out he is very pro-FIRE. He talks about all the stuff of like, yeah, people are prioritizing what's important to them, which is freedom. They're getting control of their spending and possibly making more income. They're doing all the stuff that Ramit's traditional finance stuff recommends. So pro, FIRE is taking control and leading a meaningful life. And the con is that some people in the FIRE movement maybe are obsessed with money or too cheap or afraid to spend, and it's fine to call them out too. So his criticisms, I think they focus on the tiny and rare problems like people's quirks or one person or a couple. He likes to counsel couples that are like genuinely are too cheap in what I would think, my opinion, you know, like they have millions of dollars. One of them is nagging the other one. Quite often it's like the husband nagging the wife, like, you can't spend money on this. We have to keep the crappy, you know, old minivan, or we can't go on a nice vacation. So it does happen. But I also think that Ramit focuses on this because it gets more attention rather than the broad swath of most financially independent people who are just totally chill and having a great time. And they're like, damn, I'm so glad that you can do this in our incredibly prosperous country. So my diagnosis for that is it's a bit of a clickbait headline, just like most mm-hmm. of the ones that we're reviewing here. So good job, Ramit, except for the headline.
Yep. Which, I mean, I was going to say he's one of the best copywriters in the world. So my main issue with this one, and it's not really an issue, it's just like peel things back and look at incentives. So one side note, bit of background. When I worked online and I was selling courses and other things, I watched a ton of Ramit's content from, say, 2015 to 2020 or so. I took a few of his courses, which were excellent. And that is one reason why he can highlight the ultra frugal and say, you know, we want to live a rich life, spend money, which I can get behind. I like stuff. I like to buy stuff. And I appreciate buying like high quality things. So like I dig what his message is, but his incentive and one of the things he sells is courses, very expensive courses, very good, but very expensive courses. So if he's telling you, you don't want to be too frugal, it's easier to increase your income. You could only, you know, reduce your expenses so much. And then it turns out you can earn an unlimited amount. And if you want to earn an unlimited amount, enroll in my courses. So he has a very, it's an excellent sales funnel. It's a great marketing funnel. He gets you like excited about earning more money. Hey, you want a raise? I have a course on how to get a raise and how to negotiate. And you could probably do that. I mean, it makes sense, but that is his like incentive on the other side. This is part of his marketing funnel to be like, hey, earn more money. Like you could only cut your expenses so much. So that's always in my mind. And it basically, I agree with his video here. Like you can be too frugal and like make your life miserable trying to save a small amount of money when you could like buy convenience in certain ways. And maybe, for example, paid to have the sprinklers winterized and blown out. And I have borrowed your compressor in the past, Pete, but I was like, you know what? There's a small business out here that will do it. And instead of me like picking up and coordinating and like driving over to get the compressor and spending a couple hours doing it, a dude did it for like $75 in like 12 minutes. And I was like, whoa, that was a great deal. A local company earned some money and then it saved me a few hours and blah, blah, blah. So
yeah, I think that's a really great purposeful example, right? Because I enjoy doing little tasks like that, sprinkler, helping people with their sprinklers or whatever. So this year I brought my compressor around to multiple friends' houses, especially people who didn't know how to do it themselves. I'm like, psh, look at that. And they're like, wow, you saved me. A lot of times it's more, right? Sometimes it's like $100 or $200.
Yeah.
Even so, like that level of money is not a big deal for me or the friends I'm working with because we're all middle-aged, like relatively wealthy people, but it's just kind of cool to give people empowerment in some cases. In this case, you had the empowerment and then you're like, you know what? I know what it's like and I'm still not going to do it. Like that's exactly what I think people should do for their decisions in life is like, don't be afraid of something and then try stuff. And then often it will stick and you'll be like, I enjoy doing this, right? Like I'm not going to pay somebody to do my laundry. I really enjoy chucking the clothes in the fancy washing machine, pressing the button, and then they magically come out and I enjoy hanging them up, even though I could certainly pay that. But it's like, I look forward to it. And so there's no need to replace that service in my life. Whereas other stuff, I totally will outsource.
Very good. What's next?
Okay, the next one is, I was attracted to this one because it has my own face on it and it says, fire, what happened? And it has me, pile of money and a big bonfire and the money's on. And it says, what happened to the fire movement by Brian Farrell? And so it starts by talking about me actually, like I guess this guy was an early blog reader of mine. And he said like it went well for him actually. He started out in a huge amount of debt. He got control of his spending. Maybe his earning got even higher too. And he paid off all debt and also saved up like, you know, $1 million+. And then he became totally financially independent. And I was like, wow, well, that doesn't sound like a problem to me.
He won.
Yeah. And then, but I'm like, what does he mean by what happened to the fire movement? So he says, but eventually people started quitting the fire movement. And he's like linking to all these other clickbait videos that we're just covering here as evidence, but they're also not about people leaving the fire movement, right? So I'm like, huh, I don't know, Brian. And it even really worked out very well for him financially, but his issue that he explains that he just didn't like remote work. So he had a job. He used to have a job that was highly social and he would go into an office and do things. Then he got a remote job. He thought that would be great because it's more relaxing, but he got lonely and then, you know, somehow conflated that with like the fire movement. I'm like, no, that has nothing to do with it. It's true that if your job is your only source of friends and social life, then you absolutely should not quit it, right? Because it's serving some function other than money. But on the other hand, mine was the opposite. Like my office job, my computer job got kind of boring And I was working with people who are much older than me at the time, and they were all just going home to their families. I'm like, does anybody want to do happy hour or a bike ride? And they're like, nope, I got the kids. So I was like, that was a great job to quit because I immediately had a lot more time to be with my real friends once I wasn't doing that job. And similarly, like we have a vibrant social life here in Longmont, mostly with fire people, and we don't depend on our coworkers for our socialization. So anyway, it sounds like the diagnosis of this one is clickbait headline again. I mean, actually, watching the video, I liked the guy. I was happy for him with his story.
Right.
And I just hope that he has like plenty of friends and can make sure he has a rich life, whether or not he's doing it through a job or not.
He also mentioned anxiety, depression, and alcoholism. So there's something else going on here too. And yeah. I hope he did find some friends and stuff like that. But one observation going back to potentially a trend is like, if you're working a ton of hours and your friends are at work and you get a lot of, it sounded like this dude got a lot of fulfillment from like working and leading a team and having accountability. Like he mentioned that multiple times. And that's cool. Everybody, you know, gets off on a different way. And that's great. But if all your friends and all your activities are around work and you're doing the 80-hour weeks that the first chair had mentioned, then you don't have time for your hobbies. And you kind of need to develop hobbies and pastimes. And sometimes, I mean, it's tough. Like when I picked up the guitar again after being a hobbyist, which I'm still a hobbyist, but just like trying to practice more, you suck at it. So if you're like, hey, I'm going to pick up this new hobby. I always wanted to learn X language, or I really want to become a great cook. You're going to kind of suck at it at the beginning. Anything that you're doing that's really hard that you could spend a lifetime trying to master and never get to it, you're going to suck at the beginning. So it's kind of tough for people to go from being team lead, you know what's going on, to you don't know anything, you're doing the most basic thing, and it turns out it takes a lot of hours to get better at certain hobbies. J.D. Roth, right? He was getting started with like watercolors a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And I haven't chatted with him too much recently, but saw him last fall. And yeah, he's been working on it, taking classes for a couple years. And the work is beautiful. I'm like, I can't believe like you're doing that from the beginning to the end. And he's been kind of documenting it some. It's really amazing. But at the beginning, you're not that good at it. And you have to put in the time.
I'm happy to have a portrait that he made.
Oh, like, really?
He made this silly.
That's cool.
He asked me for a photograph of myself. It was a picture that I'd put on like Instagram at one point.
Yeah.
And then he's like, can I make a watercolor painting of that? So I was like, sure, I guess. It's weird, but okay. And so he took it and then he painted it and then he mailed it to me. And then I put it up in our headquarters, Fire Collective, and it's there now. And it's like super fun. Although sometimes it feels a little creepy because people are like, why does Pete have a painting of himself up? Is this like a Donald Trump situation? I just thought it was cool because JD made it.
That is cool. I didn't realize he painted. I'll have to look at it a little closer.
Yeah, it's on my desk area.
Okay. That's awesome. All right. Next is one of my favorite writers, Morgan Housel. And I was a little surprised at his take, although I've heard him say on podcasts before, and he kind of mentions it here, like, hey, the people that retire early, after 6 months, they get bored and they want to go back to work. And I don't know anyone that has retired early. And it, you know, it's a little bit of, I think, just who he hangs around and stuff. Because like in our community, we know a lot of people that have retired early and it stuck for many, many years and everything's cool. But yeah, what's your take on this one?
So that screenshot that I saved, is that actually Morgan Housel? Because I didn't recognize him talking, but is that him?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. So the host was really like goading him into like trying to say mean stuff about the fire, the idea of the fire movement.
He did, yeah.
And the guy's like, that's so dumb. The point of life is to consume more. Work is the only way to be happy. It's like that kind of stuff. And then somebody also, I don't know if it was Morgan or the other guy, said, I think it was a product of the financial crisis. Why the fire movement started up. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I've heard so many like explanations for the fire movement that are all for different things. Like some people say, oh, it's the product of the huge bull market because everybody thinks they have enough money to retire early. And then some people, these guys are like, no, it's a product of the opposite of a bull market because people were worried about money. So they tried to save it. And I'm like, you know what it's the product of? people want to have some fucking time off and not having to work for the boss for their whole life. That's it. It's the product of freedom. It has nothing to do with economics, like the current macroeconomic condition. It's like the most valuable thing a human being can get is control over their own time. So like, that's what the FIRE movement's about. It's people who are doing the badass thing of getting control and ownership of their life.
And I was going to say, this might be another situation where like Morgan probably mostly agrees if you just talk to him, because I've heard him say, I was listening to a podcast with him and Shane Parrish today on Knowledge Project. Did you listen to that show? I think it's Knowledge Project. I think that's the one it was. But anyway, I mean, Morgan just talks about buying freedom. Like, he saves money, so he has freedom. It's like, we agree on like 99%. And it's just like a little tweak. But I wonder, do you know him?
Yeah, a little bit.
Because he has a new book out. I'm like, I wonder if we can get an interview with him.
Yeah, that would be fun.
We'll see.
I still get all the books free from Morgan Housel because, you know, his publisher hopes that I'll read them and write some positive stuff about him. But, you know, I'm too slow of a paper book reader. So it's all like published and forgotten before I finish reading it. I'm just finishing The Art of Spending Money now, which came out like 6 months ago.
Right. Again, I really like Morgan. So I'm surprised at some of the take. And I think he is the one that said the product of the financial crisis, which I'm not. Yeah. This one was surprising. Theory.
But the guy he was talking to was very like New York bro-ish. Like, you know, the whole point is to consume more. Like, these guys are such weenies for wanting to consume less. Like, why would you ever want to consume less? And it's just so ridiculous. Like, okay, is there like, let's think about it. Is there any side effects to consuming an infinite amount of resources? Like, or not? I don't know. Like, has anyone heard of, it's like, it was so clueless. It was like this tiny, tiny little consumer, like Gucci commercial take on the fucking planet we live on. Like,
right.
Absolutely. There's lots of room to be relatively decadent, but you at least have to have a perspective of the bigger picture. Otherwise you're like, why would you be proud of being clueless about the idea of resources and stuff? And if you have an idea of like how the earth and the ecosystem and physics and stuff works, you can still have a very luxurious life, but it'll just be like slightly guided to something that's more sustainable and less harmful. And you still can have just as much fun, or I would say more fun, because you understand some shit about the place you live.
And it makes me, a lot of times when I see this stuff, especially when I'm recording, I get in my own head if I'm by myself, but when we're chatting about it, I try to detach and I'm like, I wonder what their show is about normally in this specific example. It's like, I wonder what kind of echo chamber they're in. And then I think about ourselves, right? Like, what kind of FIRE echo chamber are we in, where it gets a little weird? So I always try to detach and like look from the outside and see what others may think. And then like, all right, what echo chamber are they in, where they're like, oh yeah, I do want to get the new whatever car to show off to my friends or whatever. Like, that's the whole point, you know, to let people see what you've been able to accomplish or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly get the idea of prestige and signaling and success and all that stuff. It just seems like it's level one, right? And then if you move past that, that's when you can have a bigger, more enlightened life, because you're like, oh yeah, I get that. That's fun. But there's some other things that are fun too. And also, if you understand the idea of like satisfaction and hedonic adaptation and what pleasures are durable and what are just fleeting in the moment. And we have to teach people that if they ever want to have like finite desires, because if you have insatiable desires, you're never satisfied, which is not a very fun way to live, right? And it's going to lead you down a very narrow path and you're going to miss out on a whole bunch of more of what it means to be human. And I think another thing that these guys think, again, is that the FIRE movement is about quitting work and not doing anything. And it's really not about that. It's about freeing you to do your best work if you want to, and no one's going to be pressuring you. Like, if you don't want to work, you don't have to, but most people just choose to do it. All that FIRE is independence. The I is the biggest part in FIRE, the letter I.
Oh yeah. Now, before we send it to the last one, which is really cool, I want to thank all the supporters over on Buy Me a Coffee. So a couple months ago, I made a plea like, hey, if you dig the show and you don't want ads, let me know, help support the show. So we got a lot of people that popped up. So good news, Pete, we're not going to have any of the bullshit ads, no AG1, other kind of things like that.
Yeah.
So thanks, everybody. And if you're interested in supporting the show and keeping ads off of here, we'll put a link in the description.
Hey, do I get a shout out? Because I am now an official subscriber of Mile High Fi.
You are, yeah. So you stepped up to a fairly high level, so you get special, you know, special privileges. And yeah, appreciate it. You did sign up. I saw that. I was like, yeah, Pete. Did you get the message I sent?
I was like, I did. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it was great. I just thought it was fun because I heard your plea for it earlier. I'm like, yeah, I get a lot of value from Mile High Fi, both listening and being on it. So why shouldn't I support it?
Thank you.
I do hope to get a shirt. You gave me a shirt a while ago, but it was too small. So I really want to trade it in for a bigger one if possible.
You've been working out. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We can make that happen. I have like a couple new designs too.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of asparagus stuff there. Are you a hoodie guy also, or are you more of a t-shirt?
Just t-shirt. I have enough hoodies already.
Okay. Very good. Okay. Yeah. We can make that happen for sure. All right. Last one. What do we have?
It has a picture of Mark Cuban, the famous billionaire who owns like sports teams and started like the big national pharmacy recently, Discount Pharmacy Cost Plus Drugs, where I actually just bought something, which is interesting. It says Mark Cuban on the FIRE movement by the YouTube creator's name is Gregory Gallant. And so I'm like, uh-oh, I kind of like Mark Cuban and he puts a lot of takes out on there in society of like pretty positive values. So I was hoping he's not going to be trashing me. So I watched the video and I was pleased to see that Mark Cuban is like, the FIRE movement? Oh yeah, that's exactly what I did when I was a young man. Like I just lived like a student early on and I worked hard and saved money because I knew that the most valuable asset you can have is time. And then, so he quickly saved up a bunch, invested, lived a non-ridiculous lifestyle. I'm sure it was still fun and very like empowering and everything. But then that's what gave him the free time to go on and create all these other businesses that he did. Because for him, working and creating businesses is his thing, right? And if he was a chronic consumer and had to stay in his very first finance job on Wall Street or whatever in order to like pay the BMW lease payments, he probably never would have become Mark Cuban and been free to do all this other stuff that's higher risk. And you have to sometimes work for a year or two with no income in order to start a business. So I thought that was cool. And I was like, all right, Mark gets it. And that, awesome. To me, that was like a relief because people that you respect are the ones you care most about when it comes to seeing their criticism or, you know, approval of your ideas.
And one thing that I brought up at the beginning was sort of like the evolution and how things changed. One of the, I guess, the second Jared that we referenced, he was like, some things have changed. So you kind of have to shift. And I think some of the criticisms were around specific snapshots in time. So maybe like the ultra frugality with some of the earliest bloggers, maybe around the financial crisis where they were like, all right, we're trimming down. And I came to this much later in like 2018 or something like that. So basically people are highlighting certain areas that maybe are a little bit negative, or at this point, we're not talking about like hitting FI in 1500 days, like Carl. We're talking about like Coast FI or other approaches that are more acceptable, like on a widespread basis that fits for different people. People highlight, oh, it's white software engineers. It's like, it could be, or it could be a plumber or a teacher or a firefighter or whomever that we've had on the show here. So it's like really evolved, and not a direct question, but do you have any thoughts about the evolution and how it started narrow with your specific story? You were just telling your story and trying to let people know like, hey, there's another way to do things. And no, I don't think anyone can fault you for telling your own story, right? You were just sharing a thing.
Yeah.
You weren't trying to start a cult. You know, as far as we know, no cult. And what about the evolution and how it's now, there's a lot more stories out there from many different people.
Well, in general, that's just a good thing. I especially like how the FIRE movement, for the most part, has remained fairly non-salesy and non-commercial. Like there are people trying to make a living being a creator, and that's fine, but it's not just like a big house of cards where there's like, you know, a constant bunch of like myths that have to get shared that are inaccurate in order for it to keep going on. It's not like a Ponzi scheme. You don't have to share fire ideas. You don't have to charge or make money for it at all. And they're still just as valuable. So I like all that stuff. And I don't get any richer when more people retire early or take care of their kids or whatever. So like, that's kind of, I kind of like that. The heart of the movement is mostly somewhat pure maybe, but I'm happy that it's told in different ways. And I think criticism of individual lifestyles is silly because people used to make fun of like Jacob Fisker, early retirement extreme guy, because his lifestyle was simpler than and more advanced than theirs. Like it was very engineered for ultimate efficiency, but he did that because he liked it and not because he was being super cheap. In fact, he later started making a lot more money from getting a job as a quant in the Chicago Stock Exchange company or something like that. And he still maintained his lifestyle. So I think that's cool and I respect it. And similarly to my lifestyle, I always thought it was super decadent and fancy. I mean, just because I ride a bike to the grocery store doesn't mean I'm like stingy or trying to cheap out and stuff. I just do all the stuff that I want to do. And it just happens to cost less than the average high income person's stuff in most areas. Soon I'll be spending more on a house than most people spend. And that's also fine. That's just because that's my thing. Mm-hmm. The more examples are out there, the more people can find something in it for them, I think.
So it was fun going through the issues with the FIRE movement, our reaction. And I think, I don't know, some people agreed, some people were a little angry, other people were just clickbait headline writers. But the thing is, Pete and I, we don't love everything about the FIRE movement, and we're going to tell you about it. So, Pete, you have a couple issues with the FIRE movement, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think the core principles are more or less pure, but it has gone off in a lot of different ways that I couldn't have predicted when I started writing about it in 2011, or when everybody else also started writing about it over the subsequent many years. So I think it'd be fun to go over some of the ways that it has gone crazy and the ways that it's caused problems, maybe for people or for the perception of the FIRE movement too, and see if we think we can do anything about it or if it's just that's how the internet works.
Very good. But we ran out of time, so we're going to do it on the next episode. Always fun to record with you. Thanks, Pete.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. All right. So we haven't been in the studio in a little while. Both of us took some trips and some other stuff. Do you have any highlights from your trip last winter?
Yeah. I did a pretty neat road trip, which is my favorite kind of trip. And it was just heading south to like Taos, New Mexico, and then Santa Fe, and then further south to like the near where the Mexican border is. And we did some camping and tons of hiking and all this other stuff. And it was a nice way to ring in the new year. It was over the you know, January 1st week. Yeah, it's cool. I had some cool, like best ever camping experiences just through good luck. It was like this beautiful night and there was a rocket launch coming from California that you could see going across the sky, all like, lit up right by the sunset and the moon was just right, a full moon. And yeah, really glad I did that trip.
Super cool. And then do you indulge and eat the cuisine of where you're passing through? A lot of times I'm just thinking of the great food in New Mexico and Santa Fe and the area there.
Yeah.
Did you
definitely
indulge?
Yeah. Each time coming into a new town, we were just kind of searching like what the cool restaurants or, either fancy or dive, depending on the style. Actually, came across one that was on that TV show, Drive-Ins and...
Yeah. I forget. Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives with Guy.
And it was a great experience there. So yeah, that plus, of course, the camping food. I always love just like cooking over an open fire too.
All right.
So that can rival, if you've had a big hiking active day, that can rival sometimes the best restaurant.
Yeah, yeah. A peanut butter and jelly sandwich tastes pretty awesome after a big day of hiking, or like,
man, these are like giant grilled sausages, and we were making like jambalaya with a fry pan and stuff. And,
yeah. I don't camp much anymore these days, but yeah, it was usually like ramen and like the most simple thing back in those days. But
yeah, I guess I should clarify, this was car camping with like the Tesla and all the, like a powered cooler, refrigerator, induction cooktop, like coffee, espresso machine, all the stuff. So we like fold that out on the campsite and just have everything.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really like backpack camping.
Very good. And then I was trying to remember the different trips. I feel like I'm forgetting one. I need to like log things a little bit better. But most recently, I was up in Breckenridge with some friends. Carl was actually there. Tyler, our drummer in our our band now, he and I went up with actually Rusty. So we all hung out and had a nice time. And it was, you know, we just had a cold snap right here in Longmont, and a lot of the country did. But when we went to Breck, it was like, I think it was like highs of 35. It wasn't that cold. There wasn't much snow up there, but enough to have a nice time. But yeah, really cool to get out and, you know, hang out in the mountains. And remember when we went up a couple of years ago now, we were playing pickleball and all that stuff?
Yeah, it was a great trip.
So we went to that same park. So the pickleball courts were covered with snow, of course, but there's a sledding hill right there. So we did some sledding. Yeah, pretty fun. Went down a couple times. Now that we're getting old, like a couple times down the hill was pretty good. And I even asked for a helmet. I'm apparently prone to head injury. So I was like, I do not want to be the dumb fuck that like slides down the hill on the tube and I end up with a concussion. Like the last few years I've had some injuries, some head injuries. So I'm just like, all right, I'll wear a bike helmet. I'll look like the only fool out there with a bike helmet. But anyway, yeah, it was fun. Are you a sledder?
I used to be. Then I switched to the kind of the adult version of snowboarding, but I'll still go on a sled if there is one.
Yeah, yeah. And Carl, I mean, he grew up sledding, I imagine, but he's a beast. He was like running to get a running start and like just going face first. And I was like, oh man, that's so brave. I would have done that years ago, but now I'm just like, all right.
Yeah, maybe it depends. You grew up in a warm place, right? Mm-hmm. So you're not comfortable with low friction as much as us Northerners are.
That's true.
We can also, like on the play yards and the school yards, if there's like a patch of ice, the kids will line up and take turns like sprinting and then going and see how far they can slide with their feet. And that's just like a normal pastime anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. I saw some people doing that, and I was, you know, I would take like one step and slide a bunch. And I'm like,
Yeah, I guess there were advantages to growing up in a place with bad weather.
Yeah, you're used to it.